With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Critically analyzing global affairs. This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A quick reminder to join TNT Radio and the annual pilgrimage to the healing city of Bath in southwest England to hear the pioneers and innovators of our time reveal how excellent health has been hidden from us and explore what the reveal means for the better world. We are co-creating the Better Way Conference 2023 at the Apex Hotel in Bath, UK. Is going on from this Thursday, June 1st to Sunday, June 4th, unveiling a better way for health, freedom, and sovereignty, heard only on TNT Radio. So stay up to speed there. I believe the in-person tickets have been sold out, which is good news. And we were discussing yesterday the fate of Kit Clarenberg, British journalist based in Serbia, who's been a guest on my podcast, how the British counter-terrorist task force interrogated this nonviolent journalist for five hours. This only happens in, you know, authoritarian Russia or North Korea. Now it's happening in United Kingdom. So that makes Great Britain and UK a dictatorship. Let's not mince words. Let's you know, this is one of the things that irks me the most is devils pretending to be angels. Let's just, you know, be honest about who we are. And on that note, retired diplomat Craig Murray, he wrote a piece about that and how this is happening to more and more people that he knows. Johanna Ross, Vanessa Beely, Kit Clarenberg. And his conclusion really hits home. He mentions Randy Credico, whose Twitter account was canceled, who was supposed to come on my show but bailed on me last minute. He does great work, nevertheless, Randy Credico. And his two final sentences, Craig Murray says, to be a dissident in the UK or indeed the West today is to see every single day your friends persecuted and to see the walls close in upon yourself. A unified political class controlled by billionaires is hurtling us towards fascism. That now seems to me undeniable. Haven't I been saying this for years upon years upon years? We're on that road. So it's quite unfortunate. And real quick, some biosecurity tyrannical news going on here. Basically, we've got this at the WHO, a group co-chair is basically, he's calling for, well, first of all, he has predicted another once in a lifetime pandemic. I don't know how, you know, he says it's certain to happen. I don't know how he knows that, but he's calling for prioritizing actions that may restrict individual liberties. These people are insane. And on top of that, a WHO member wants to run a simulation exercise before implementing the pandemic treaty. What is it with these simulations? You know, this is for the false. You run these simulations basically for false flags, like COVID was or 9/11. And so they want to do more simulations before they implement the final nail in the coffin, this global dystopian pandemic treaty. And you know, some other interesting news. North Korea was just elected to the WHO executive board. I guess that's just another sign of the way things are headed there. And David Bell, who does great work, was a guest in my program here on TNT a couple times. He says, imagine a world in which people thought it was okay to use computer-generated responses to persuade people to be injected with a novel medicine against the virus to which they are at minimal risk and already immune. What an amazing way to make more money. And he's citing a brand new study that came out titled Effectiveness of Chatbots and COVID Vaccine Confidence and Acceptance in Thailand, Hong Kong, and Singapore. Basically, you know, how they use propaganda to control us. One more piece of health news. This is hilarious. My former Chicago mayor, Lori Lightfoot, which was like the first mayor in, I don't know how, maybe ever to lose re-election Chicago, is going to teach at Harvard's Chan School of Public Health, even though she's got absolutely no qualifications for this. So there you go. More clown world. And this interesting article from Bloomberg talks about how private jets are going to survive, but using them will likely cost more. It goes on to say that basically the number of private jet flights increased 64% last year, leading to almost doubling of CO2 emissions. And they say, they conclude, maybe there will be slightly fewer flights with sustainable fuels, but they, you know, the elites have no alternative if they want to continue seeing their clients face to face. There still is a need. It's not by train that you will cross the Atlantic. So, you know, lol, plebs and serfs, we won't be flying, but the elites are just going to be, you know, living life as usual with their private jets and doubling emissions. But we got to eat bugs and have our cars taken from us and air travel, and we can't have any more kids. But the elites can do whatever in the heck they want. All righty. If you have a suggestion for a possible guest or host that you want to hear on TNT Radio, let us know. Or if there's a topic you want us to broach, just simply fill out the suggestion form at the top of tntradio.live, or you can message any single presenter on TNT Radio. Each presenter has a contact form. Fill it out. It'll get to our email. Mine is hiroemorich@tntradio.live. I always read everything. Great. Super happy to hear from you. And I always reply generally if you've got a question. So that's an easy way for you to help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
Breaking down the headlines.
It's the news I trust.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Cobra Commander Elon Musk has just been renamed the world's wealthiest person, and it looks as though he's going to stay that way for a while, according to the Defense Department. Under a recently made deal, the Pentagon will be purchasing Starlink satellite communications terminals and services from the billionaire's company SpaceX for use by the Ukrainian military. Here with the story, joining me again is TNT Radio news producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Thanks, Hervory. Wow, Musk makes, what is this, the third or fourth story I've covered today that involves Elon Musk? He's all over the place. All right. So I guess he's man-spreading. All right. So yeah, billionaire. Billionaire. Tony Stark wannabe, Elon Musk, has regained his title of world's richest person. This is according to the latest Bloomberg Billionaires Index ranking. I don't know about you, but I was eagerly awaiting this list. It's finally here. Musk, whose portfolio includes electric car company Tesla, the social media platform Twitter, and private space company SpaceX, more about them in a minute, has been in and out of the number one spot on the Bloomberg Index in recent years. His leading competitor in recent months has been luxury goods tycoon Bernard Arnault, founder and CEO of LVMH, a conglomerate representing dozens of luxury brands, including Louis Vuitton and Dior. Arnault briefly overtook Musk on the Bloomberg Index in December 2022. The French billionaire pulled ahead again before Musk. There he goes. The undisputed champion has regained the number one spot again. All right. So his net worth, Musk's that is, which had stood above $340 billion in November 2021, slipped below the $200 billion mark in November 2022. Oh, so sad. By the end of the year, Musk's fortune had fallen to a measly $137 billion, making him the first person to ever lose more than $200 billion in estimated net worth. That was according to Bloomberg. I'm curious, where did it go? Anyways, much of the decline in his wealth last year came as he shifted attention away from his largest asset, Tesla, no thanks, I'm sure, in part to China, and toward his purchase of Twitter. The electric car company lost nearly half its market value, and Musk lost about $70 billion between April 22 and November 22, as he moved to acquire and revamp Twitter. Musk's overall net worth improved this year following a rebound in Tesla stock. Of course, who didn't see that coming? Shares in the electric car company have rallied 66%, and Musk's assets have gained $55.3 billion in value this year. Let's see. So, yeah, I think, where is he at? So he beat Arno by $5.7 billion. So he's at $192.3 billion right now. All right. And Amazon founder Jeff Bezos nipping at both of their heels at $144 billion. All right. Now, my argument is, this is all me, this is my theory, is that he's about to do very well with this other deal. The U.S. Department of Defense announced on Thursday it awarded a contract to SpaceX for the Starlink satellite communications services in Ukraine. Now, I'll remind everybody, in case you didn't know, like a good drug dealer, Elon Musk's company initially funded the program out of his own pocket. That's right. He let you have the first taste for free, and the rest is going to cost you. So, yep, that's what's going on. The Pentagon said in a statement, quote, satellite communications constitute a vital layer in Ukraine's overall communications network, and the department contracts with Starlink for services of this type. That's what they said in the statement. They added that it is working to ensure Kyiv, quote, has the resilient satellite and communication capabilities they need, end quote. I wonder if that has anything to do with how they target with those drones and stuff. Anyway, the military declined to disclose any details of the contract, you don't say, citing, quote unquote, operational security reasons and the, quote, critical nature of these systems. However, according to, again, Bloomberg, the contract was likely made under the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, the USAI, which has seen Washington purchase weapons, ammunition, and other equipment for Kyiv's military from private companies. That's right. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is your hard-earned taxpayer dollars, Americans. What do you think, Gregory?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I almost had to bust out my Starlink yesterday because yesterday my ISP was temporarily failing. So I had opened the box and was worried I wouldn't be able to do my TNT show, but luckily the internet came back. So, I can't deny that Starlink, the idea, the technology is actually good, extremely useful. I can go anywhere. I can go on the mountaintop where there's no cell signal in rural Mexico and, be transmitting, doing internet, podcast, TNT. So we have to admit it's an amazing technology. Now all I need is solar backup. My electricity just went out before I started the show. So if I go offline, you'll know why, but, I think it cannot be any clearer that Musk is a front man for the military-industrial complex. This is the strategy of, the military-industrial complex. They have created this facade. They've created all of these facades of Bezos and Zuckerberg and Musk intentionally. So to the world, it seems like. The Pentagon is just more behind the scenes, so it's not as obvious. But clearly, it's the same effect. The Pentagon is running everything. Musk is the front man. For me, something that illustrated this was, Matt Walsh, the conservative of the What is a Woman documentary. They were going to stream it, and then it was limited on or censored on Twitter. And Elon said, this was a mistake by many people at Twitter. It is definitely allowed. And so my take is that it's basically some Department of Defense apparatus, that's system that's running Twitter, and Musk is the front man, and it's still, a lot of things are still getting caught, in these algorithms. And then Musk has to trot out there and say, oh, if there's enough, people complaining, and he'll say, oh, that was a mistake. We'll fix that. Wink, wink. And then, In the meanwhile, in the background, you've got the Pentagon's DARPA system basically running the show. That's sort of my take on all of this ruckus.
That was one of the other Musk stories I covered earlier, as well as this. Did you hear or see the Babylon Bee interview he did? Apparently, the engineers at Twitter found a decades-old list of about 1,000 words that if you used any of those words, it didn't even matter who the heck you were on Twitter, any tweet got the same treatment. It was like instantly shadow banned, basically. It was all dropped to the bottom of the feeds or whatever their word is for that. You know what I mean? So he was talking about that recently. I just want to remind everybody real quick, Starlink 4000, speaking of thousands, communication satellites in low Earth orbit that we know of. So when he was throwing this out there for free last February, I believe is when it was, when the conflict in Russia was going on at first, he funded it personally through private donations, supposedly for months. Then in October 2022, he revealed that the effort cost $20 million a month. But I imagine that's at his cost. I wonder how much he's charging the government. And then we all know how that goes. How much did those toilet seats cost, Trevori?
$600. Well, I've bookmarked that Babylon Bee interview with Musk. I do want to see that. You know, it's important to just, consume as much information from all these different perspectives. You know, even if Musk is whoever he is, it's still important to be able to decipher what is going on. And all right, we got Jose Nino back today on a Thursday, not the usual Friday, because he and I are going to be at the Ron Paul Institute conference this weekend. So phone lines are open. Feel free to call in. We'll be right back.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
What is going on with the governments of our world ceding their authority to an unelected body, the WHO?
Well, I had a full briefing on the WHO treaty and the amendments to the international health regulations. They've got to be both looked at the same time. They both come from the WHO. Basically, for those who don't know, the WHO is an arm of the United Nations. It's based in Geneva. It's been in existence since about 1947. Its remit is to help world health, and it's got a charter, and that's all pretty benign. Until now, its recommendations have been advisory, but it's looking to get more powers. All their recommendations would be mandatory. Governments would have to abide by them. It gives the Director General, Mr. Dr. Tedros, who's a particularly dubious background, the ability to call a public health emergency of international concern, which they would take sweeping powers over all aspects of our lives. It's really pretty frightening.
Weekends are better when you spend it with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Lorry from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
We don't talk at you.
Blah, 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 blah.
Shut up! We talk with you.
What do you think of this idea?
Let me tell you this.
What's wrong with this picture?
From government overreach to the global plandemic, TNT Radio invites you to join us as we separate facts from fiction, truth from propaganda, day in, day out. Call the open line anytime. In the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. In the U.K., call 033-024-1026. And in Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech has a home on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We're chatting with Jose Nino, Venezuelan American based in Texas. He's with us every week. He's a purveyor of contrarian political insights, a freelance writer, political analyst. You can find him at josbcf.substack. What is it? The Nino Files?
Say Nino Unfiltered. That's Substack. Nino Files is my political strategy newsletter.
All right. And you just did a podcast. I haven't had time to listen to it with mi amigo, James Guzman. So, how are things, Jose, out there in Texas?
Oh, things are going really great in terms of work. I have a stacked plate and getting a lot of stuff done. And I can't wait for tomorrow to meet you in the flesh and actually get to have genuine interactions with people in meet space, because I've noticed over the years that most of my political contacts I tend to know online and not so much in person.
Yeah, although, I've been impressed. When I first met you, became familiar with your work, you have met a lot of these folks online. And yeah, it'll be cool to meet. And then, a few weeks ago, I was having a Croatian barbecue in Illinois with John Kleizek, who's been a guest of mine. And I just knew him from online. And so many more people like this in LA. I was in April, met half a dozen or plus of my TNT guests and podcast guests. And so very cool. And then we'll get to meet Daniel McAdams, who's been a guest of both of ours, who runs the Ron Paul Institute. So we'll be hanging out with him Saturday. Jordan Chattel, Scott Horton, who's been, my guest years too, I think. And hopefully, we'll see if you can get another photo with Ron Paul. Yeah, you can update your Twitter profile. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
That'll be funny. But I just published a piece today of yours on geopoliticsandempire.com about Turkey and Erdogan. And I liked your one of your conclusions where you say Turkey has a longstanding habit of hedging and playing great powers off each other to maximize its own power on the world stage. And with Erdogan still at the helm, Turkey will continue hedging its bets and playing the West off the East. And kind of what I was saying earlier, you have to admire in some ways Erdogan. He's not pretending to be, some angel. He's kind of pretty blunt and forthcoming about who he is. And you have to admire his opportunism and this, balancing act. He wants the best for himself and, maybe secondly for Turkey. And so your further thoughts on where Turkey is headed?
Yeah, it's definitely heading eastward. And I do think that NATO could be faced with a very tough decision to make with regards to Turkey, because they're on a host of issues, whether it's like the Kurdish question to the fact that Turkey is becoming more authoritarian in nature. It's starting to look increasingly out of step with NATO's entire ideological ethos. So I think that Turkey is going to play much more of an independent role on the geopolitical stage. That said, it does have some interests in Eurasia that some people, anti-China and anti-Russia people, will kind of like, because of the fact that there are strong movements in Turkey that are pan-Turkic in nation and want to see Turkey project more influence in Central Asia and adjacent regions that have Turkic-speaking people or people of like Turkic extraction.
And I'd agree with your highlighting of the trend that it will become, Turkey is on the road, I think, to being more Islamist oriented. And I did sense stuff like that when I was living in Kazakhstan, because Kazakhstan and Turkey culturally, ethnically are very close, and you would see the Turkish schools, their influence all over Kazakhstan, and just that push not only of the ethnic ties but the Islamic ties as well. And so I can definitely see that trend. And as you mentioned, people like John Bolton and the West, I don't think they're too happy. We did see a couple of years back the West Langley tried to regime change Erdogan. They didn't succeed. And so any final thought on that before we go to headlines?
Yeah, I just think that Turkey is going to be faced with some interesting decisions in the next few years. And I believe that it will revert back to its proven time-honored strategy of hedging. A lot of powers are going to be doing that too, because as the West grows more unstable, countries will start to exercise more of their geopolitical options. It's an inevitability at this juncture.
And you also mentioned in the article very quickly, some of the first to congratulate Erdogan was President Putin, Iranian President Raisi. And so I think it's a no-brainer at this point, as you say. Just there's a new, you know, group in town, the multipolar verse, the multipolar clique, and everyone's jumping on board. You know, the whole Western system is spent economically in terms of debt and militarily, and so everyone is this is gaining momentum. You cannot deny this. There's the train is moving. It's building this whole, you know, non-Western world. And with that, we're going to jump to the headlines with Santiago.
I got news for you. News.
TNT Radio News.
It's about time.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. The fight against wildfires that have forced at least 21,000 people from their homes in Nova Scotia is expected to reach a pivotal point today. Fire officials are worried about a resurgence in two major fires because of a phenomenon known as crossover. A Malaysian climber narrowly survived after a Nepali Sherpa guide hauled him down from below the summit of Mount Everest in a very rare high-altitude rescue.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
We're talking with Jose Nino, political analyst. Follow him on Twitter at Jose AL. Nino, you'll find him on Substack. He does podcast analysis for big league politics, geopolitics, and empire, and many other outlets. And you, maybe to take a break from multipolarity for a moment, you wrote about Mike Pence launching his presidential campaign next week. And I was thinking about this as well. And I guess he's going to do it in Des Moines, Iowa. I've been there once as I was passing through the Midwest. And the only reason I stopped in Des Moines was to watch a Chris Cornell concert. I was a huge fan of Chris Cornell, the late, unfortunately, Chris Cornell of Soundgarden and Audio Slave and Temple of the Dog. And I just seriously, like, I don't think Mike Pence should even be running. I mean, just looking at the guy, he's a total, like, he'll do whatever the military industrial complex tells him to do. Just looking at him. Yeah, he's empty suit. He's got no charisma, nothing. Total empty suit, as you say. And he reminds me, I know this is a weird example. Like I said, I'm very big into video games. I haven't been able to play that much at all the last couple of years.
God,
When you're a father and doing a lot of work, but the Doom, when they remade Doom for the first time in 3D, really great game, but there was this like Marine captain that was like became possessed by the demons.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah,
you
yeah,
know
yes,
what I'm saying.
Yes.
He reminds me so much of Mike Pence. And
also he reminds me of one of the characters from the Johnny Quest show as well that has like the white hair and whatnot. One of the like the older characters.
Is that Cartoon Network? No.
Yeah.
Quest.
Yeah, it's like way back in the day, man.
Oh yeah. So I mean, what are your thoughts on? I mean, Pence running. I don't think he's gonna get far at all.
No.
And then, you know, any further thoughts on? You know, we talk about this every week. The whole there seems to be this feud now between DeSantis and Trump and Craig Jardula, who's been a guest of mine. He was with Misty Winston recently. He went, I think it was in New Hampshire. RFK Jr. just had a press conference and he asked him some very interesting questions. So your further thoughts on Pence and the whole scene?
Yeah, he's just like an empty suit. I don't see him doing anything of substance because his type of conservatism is this like weird social conservatism that has like some appeal, but it's like not enough to win a general election. And he's also like a neocon, a total stooge for the military industrial complex, in addition to the fact that he is a fixture of Conservatism Inc. He's not going to rock the boat. There are worse politicians than him, in my opinion, but like, I don't think he brings anything to the table, and he's definitely not somebody who I'd vote for. Now, as far as like the Trump DeSantis thing, I think it's actually a total mess. And I don't really care much for Ron DeSantis, but at the same time, I've become like increasingly tired of Trump too. This is not the 2016 Trump, like the very populist firebrand Trump. It's a very diminished Trump, but at the same time, like, it's not like the alternatives to him are much better when it comes to these presidential candidates. So the GOP is just playing its role as the stupid party to the Democrats' evil party, as the late great Sam Francis would say.
Yeah, and, you know, RFK Jr. was interesting. Craig Pasta Jardula asked him the question. First, you know, RFK Jr. tweeted in support of Roger Waters, and then he deleted some tweets because he said, I mean, fair enough, he said he wasn't certain of Roger Waters' positions on Israel and stuff. And so once he discovered that, you know, that's not RFK's thing, which is fine. You know, I don't hold anything against him. And I'm not quite sure I share Roger Waters' views so strongly either. But again, to everyone their own. And, you know, he gave, you know, he said he supports Israel, but he also supports, I guess, the aspirations of the Palestinians. And, you know, my view is that, you know, the Palestinians are I think everyone should be able to agree they're being treated very inhumanely with having their homes demolished and being put under this, you know, prison police state. But yeah, I don't know if you got any other thoughts on RFK Jr. It would be cool to see basically Trump versus RFK Jr. And Biden collapsed again today. I don't know if you saw that. He was giving this talk.
Yeah, I saw that. Yes. Yeah.
Just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable, Jose.
It's really a microcosm of what like the state of the U.S. when you actually think about it from like a meta perspective. So, yeah. Pretty sad. Yeah,
I mean, it pretty much says it all. And maybe if we go to Latin America, again, back to multipolarity, Brazil's Lula has come out now pushing for a common currency in South America. We've talked about this before, but they keep, again, the momentum is here now. He made the remarks during a meeting with South American heads of state in Brasilia, as he highlighted the significance of efforts to ditch the dollar in trade throughout the world. The single currency proposal by Lula would apply to the Mercosur trade bloc comprised of Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, and Uruguay. And it's interesting, we've got the other bloc, UNASUR, which is basically translated the South American Union. And we had Gustavo Petro of Colombia rejoin UNASUR, which is interesting. And my thesis, again, is that Mercosur and UNASUR are basically the same. It's the same thing, but they're probably seeing which one is going to advance better. And then they'll probably go with one and discard the other or merge them or something like that. But and now on top of that, we had Cuban president say it's time to end U.S. dollar's hegemony. Miguel Diaz-Canel has said giving up the U.S. dollar will free the developing world from Washington's hegemony. And I mean, that's just a statement of fact. So, you know, your thoughts on this or any other interesting things that you're seeing in Latin America?
Yes, I believe that Brazil may start taking a much harder turn towards the Eurasian bloc. Historically, Brazil is kind of like a hedger as well, like Turkey. It tends to pursue an independent foreign policy, but because of how just crazy the U.S. has become, it is going to start looking for alternatives to the current Western order. And I think this alternative currency system might be a long-term project that the region's going to pursue, because there are a good deal of countries in Latin America that don't really care much for being placed under the thumb of the U.S.
Yeah, and you know, just along those lines, you had a chat recently with James Guzman of Borderless podcast, and he was actually in town recently, but we just couldn't. He was briefly in town. I couldn't, wasn't able to meet with him, but both of you were discussing Mexico. I just published today, a while ago, my latest podcast interview with Kurt Halbrath, who's been 20 plus years in Mexico. He's down in Oaxaca. And we had a great discussion on Mexico and AMLO in the shadow of American empire. And he's left. I'm conservative, but we pretty much agreed on everything. And just what do you take away with your discussion from James? I feel like Mexico is, it's on the up. Things are looking up, I think, for Mexico. I feel actually just yesterday. I finally got my new fridge. I haven't been able to plug it in yet because you got to wait a while. And one of the dudes helping me was a Mexican who lived in Florida for like over a decade, speaks, English. And he was telling me he prefers, he came back to Mexico. He prefers Mexico to Florida or the U.S. And it's just amazing to keep hearing Mexicans and he says he's a U.S. citizen. So he can go back anytime. He's like, no, I like Mexico. And it's just fascinating to keep hearing that sort of thing. And, some of your thoughts on your discussion with James.
Yeah, this talk was mostly centered on Mexican culture and how it has fared so far being under the thumb of the U.S., just being so close to it, and how it's actually been pretty resilient and has not been fully Americanized. And we just talk about how Mexico still has not been fully caught, fully absorbed by the woke mind virus, but that there are certain like subversive elements in the country that try to put it on that path. But yeah, we just talked about like other stuff, about some misconceptions about Mexico, and also some more cultural related stuff like dating and those type of relations there.
What are some misconceptions about Mexico?
Mostly just about like how some people think that it's like really backwards when it actually is. While there's like obviously like a lot of poverty, it has like it is pretty developed when you look at it from like a broader picture compared to other countries, especially even compared to a lot of other Latin American countries.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, again, everything's give and take. My internet is faster here than in the U.S. Who is it?
Yeah.
We were talking about Starlink before. Carl Tykrib, who's a Canadian Christian, who's got an amazing book called Game of Gods that's massive that I've got right behind me. And someday, hopefully, I have time to read it. And he talks about the New World Order and this stuff. And he was on Facebook. He was saying his internet speed in Canada was like 5 megabytes upload and not even a megabyte. No, download and not even 1 meg upload. And he got a Starlink, too, just like me. So he got his own Starlink. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of so many misconceptions with Mexico. That's what I talked about with my guest on Geopolitics and Empire, Kurtz. And he's been here 20 plus years. And it's just this exceptional attitude that Americans have. And, as Putin wrote in his New York Times op-ed back in the 2010s, God made us all equal. No one is better than any other, whether it's an individual or people group or nation or empire. We are all this, they say death is the great equalizer. There's that proverb at the end of the game. What is it? The pawn and the king go in the box, right? Whether you're a king or a prince or just a plebe, all the skeletons look the same.
Yep.
Jose. There was another quote again today, regards to multipolarity. Foreign Minister of India, Jai Shankar, there was a BRICS meeting today, and he says, our gathering must send out a strong message that the world is multipolar. And again, I just feel like it's happening. There's no denying it. It's all these countries, and I think they do have, there is this righteous indignation, against the West, which has started wars, killed millions, extracted a lot of resources from all of these countries. And this is that moment. Now it's like hyenas that are ganging together. Vultures are circling on the West. Would you agree?
Yes, I do agree about that, that like the West is starting to be on the path of potentially getting like a massive comeuppance due to the arrogance of its political elites. And it's starting to go through a process that I think that all civilizations, irrespective of like their peaks and lows, they have to go through.
Yeah. And well, with that, Jose, we're going to have to jump to our break. Again, people can find you on Twitter at Jose AL Nino, find your Substack as well, and your articles all over the place. And feel free to call in and chat with us. Anyone, phone numbers, as always, are listed at the top of TNTRadio.live, toll free, I believe. We'll be right back.
Red alert! The World Health Organization is once again pushing their global pandemic treaty, but some European elected officials are fighting back. You'll want to hear this.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Croatian Member of Parliament Mislav Kolazukak spoke for all freedom-loving citizens of the world when he said the following this week.
It will be healthier and safer for humanity to sign agreement with the Colombian drug cartel. They know all about drugs for sure. During the COVID pandemic, World Health Organization only told lies.
Bravo to this Croatian member of parliament. Bravo! Let's not forget that the World Health Organization is funded by the number one funder, Bill Gates, a close second, the United States government, and the WHO is beholden to China and pushed Chinese-style lockdowns on the world. We cannot live in a world where Bill Gates-funded scientists at the WHO declare global instant lockdowns. We must now start the Great Reject.
This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The world is transitioning to so-called renewable energy, which is a form of economic suicide. More than 60% of the world's electricity generation comes from fossil fuels. Only 6% comes from wind power and 3% from solar. But more importantly, fossil fuels currently make up more than 80% of total world primary energy consumption. Oil remains the single largest source of global energy, which is mostly used in transport. Therefore, the energy generated from wind turbines makes up just 1% of total world primary energy consumption, and solar power, half of 1%. Renewables will not achieve net zero carbon. But the economic destruction under this agenda is severe and will get much worse unless this madness ends.
The human mind is like a computer, no matter how efficient it may be. Its reliability is only as great as the information fed into it.
That's a campaign promise.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
You're hearing it.
TNT.
It's our last segment with Venezuelan American Jose Nino. And looking at other trends that are going on, there seem to be core trends that are always going on. And again, migration is one of them. And that's one of the key weapons of the globalists. And it's funny, in the comment section, someone suggested to have on as a guest fellow Spanish-speaking Croat, Alex Kraner, who lives out in Monaco. And we were supposed to get together last summer in Croatia, but we couldn't. We just, last minute couldn't make it. And he's been on my podcast, but he can't come on my broadcast because it's like middle of the night Europe. But I'm sure he's been with other presenters on TNT Radio. I'll have him on my podcast soon. And but anyways, Alex Kraner had said that he's viewed, and he served in the Croatian army, and that the migration that's going on at the U.S.-Mexico border, that's at this point, it's not organic. You know, it's just a massive flood of migrants, and not even just Latin Americans. It's got Chinese men and Russian men upon the thousands. Something weird is going on, and this is this is a weapon of war. This is a military strategy. So it's like, and America's, adversaries, China and Russia, I think they're participating in this. And, looking at it objectively, that's just what you would do if you were America's adversary. Obviously, I don't want America to collapse I actually got into this. There was someone in my Telegram channel I had to delete, ban, because they were just so nasty and saying, die, America, and telling me to, like, oh, you don't want America to die? You're nuts. And I'm like, I'm not a self-hating Westerner, you know? I highlight the evils of the American Empire, but that doesn't mean I want America to collapse and die. I want the empire, you know, to be done away with, but I don't want my country to collapse into civil war and poverty. But your thoughts on the migration? I don't know if we covered it last time, but you wrote about Chicago residents protesting migrants being housed. I'm sorry, but, you know, as progressives, that's what you get now. If you want migration, you're gonna have to be a good Samaritan, host these migrants.
Yeah.
And so there's that, and then you also wrote about in Europe a record number of Syrian males obtaining German citizenship. So your just further thoughts, broader thoughts on the globalist migration that's going on.
Yeah, I think that your friend is correct about that. From a broad perspective, because there's nothing organic about this migration inflow. It's very much a political weapon that's manufactured by NGOs that want to displace, like, the historic nations of Europe and, like, the US. And I would say too that, yeah, there is a geopolitical component as well, because you do see countries like China that do take advantage of these very liberal migration systems by embedding several of their, like, intelligence assets and other people to infiltrate these countries. And even Turkey does that to some extent with the whole long arm of Ankara or long arm of Erdogan, where you see Turkish migrants do help, like, project Turkey's power across Europe, soft power especially. But ultimately, what's at fault here isn't so much these external actors, but rather the political class in these respective Western nations that have opened the floodgates to mass migration and that openly facilitate this stuff. And I'd also argue that the NGO industrial complex is also to blame too, because that's one entity that has played a huge role in facilitating this unprecedented deluge of basically invaders at this juncture.
Yeah, I mean, that's often overlooked. Most NGOs are part of this globalist control complex. And, you know, Michael Yon, who I interviewed last year, I should try to get him on TNT, but he's constantly on the move, and it's hard to pin him down. But he posted recently on his Twitter a photo of a bag that's apparently being given to these migrants in Latin America. And the bag itself says, you know, ONU Migración, that's UN Migration, I guess the organization. And then there's another organization I haven't checked up on called CARE, I guess probably one of those NGOs you're talking about. And it's like a pre-rape kit. UN is handing out, like, condoms to migrant women, you know, on their route to the US, and that's kind of like encouraging them on their way to get raped or kidnapped to become sex slaves or you know, killed. I mean, they should be working to stop illegal migration, bettering the economy. I'm all in favor of legal migration. I mean, all my life I've lived that. I've legally migrated to many different places, become citizens of multiple countries. I think people should be able to more easily, freely, legally migrate. It's getting out of control, Jose. And you've also wrote in a few pieces on guns, and there's been some pushback. I think, is it in Texas? You know, what's the latest in terms of the gun control?
Oh, yeah, there's been several prominent lawsuits filed against the Biden regime's ATF policies that will effectively make, like, millions of people criminals for simply possessing a pistol brace accessory that does, like, really nothing in particular to make weapons more dangerous. And frankly, it's used by so many lawful people that it's like it's a big nothing burger, but the political class wants to ban it because these people ultimately want to destroy the right to bear arms.
Yeah, I don't really see much new on that front. Like, we know the name of the game. They want to get rid of guns. There's just so many in America. It's going to be difficult. I mean, at this rate, it's going to take them, like, by the end of the century to get rid of American guns. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a futile endeavor. That's why I think there's a more of a focus by Gun Control Inc. to bankrupt gun manufacturers and deplatform those type of people more so than trying to fully ban guns.
Yeah, they might go that ESG route to bankrupt, as you say, stores and manufacturers. And then the other approach is, I think, the indoctrination, brainwashing of the young generation, where I think that's one of their biggest points of attack, where, you know, this next generation is not going to be in favor of guns. They're going to be anti-gun. And that's going to, you know, decrease, I think, gun ownership in general. You know, thoughts maybe on, it's June, so I guess, I don't know, is it Rainbow Month or something? I don't pay attention to this stuff, but it's like something like Pride Month. And, you know, recently I had Will Spencer on of the Renaissance of Men, renomen.com, a really great chat with him on masculinity. And he posited that there's been a war on masculinity for men for a century now, and that he starts with the 1950s. You know, that's really where we had the cultural assault. And do you have any thoughts on the latest in wokeism, rainbow fascism, and so forth?
It's more of the same, and it's become a yearly ritual for these freaks because it's the surrogate religion. Now that we're in like a post-Christian society, wokeism is going to function like that. It's going to take an increasingly like religious type of image as well. And it's going to get more obnoxious and perverted too.
You were recently quote tweeting Ted Cruz. And I did see in Uganda, it was interesting. People in Uganda were, what did they see recently? I just discovered Simon Atiba of Today News Africa, which does great work. And he said Ugandan students from at least 13 universities take to the streets protesting against Joe Biden in front of their parliament and singing, "We don't want your pro-gay money. We want and love our country more than money." I don't know. I'm of the opinion that people should be able to live peaceably doing what they want. But again, stuff shouldn't be shoved down people's throats, and you know, some certain social mores should be kept. But you know, any other? Got a couple minutes left. Any other thoughts on? You know, I haven't even checked into what Ted Cruz has been banging on about.
I think this is like another sign that the U.S. cannot like stop getting into other countries' like internal affairs and all of that, and like you have like an ostensive conservative moaning about LGBT causes. It's like get real. Like there's no need to be like counter signaling countries that promote like socially conservative policies. That might be pretty harsh, but it's whatever. Certain countries are going to pursue certain policies that we won't like. That's how the freaking world works.
I mean, it's just another example of what I was saying earlier, exceptionalism, where America tells everyone how to live, what to do, and then they're giving money to foreign countries to socially engineer in every which way, you know, to promote abortion, LGBT, militarism, you know, you name it, just go down the line and just let people and countries be. But you know, that's the whole project of American empire now. It's become the arm of globalism, and it's trying to remake the world in preparation for world government. And you know, we are getting there. A little over 1 minute to midnight. Any final thought for us, Jose?
Not really. I think this was a pretty slow type of week in general, and I think this could be very commonplace soon. because most of this stuff is just like more of the same and very predictable for those of us who have been in this game for a while, but we should always still stay on top of stuff so that we're never like blindsided by the powers that be.
But it's going to be one banger of a weekend out there in Texas at the Ron Paul Institute conference. Fun times, fun times. All right, everyone, check out Jose Nino on Twitter at Jose AL Nino. You'll find him on Substack as well, josbcf.substack.com, where he does podcasts and analysis, just keeping up with Clown World. I'll see you, Jose, tomorrow. And we got Eve Engler, Montreal-based Canadian activist, coming up. Stay tuned.